Welcome one, welcome all to Back in My Day. My name is David Petrangelo, and this week the not so stereotypical millennials that are not myself are going to have a couple of movie reviews. Now, Ian and Mike both saw the most recent Guardians of the Galaxy movie. This was a couple weeks ago. It's on me. I was away. My bad. And then I forgot to get the episode edited and out. So instead, I'm going to put it in this episode. But that is going to be the second half. What we're going to have before that is we're going to have Ian's instant reaction to Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. That movie just came out a few days ago as of this brief recording here at the beginning of this episode. And Ian's Mr. Movie for our podcast. He is going out there and he is seeing all these movies as quick as he can and giving us his instant reactions, which you can also see on your podcast feed. Yeah, you know what? This is a movie extravaganza. We have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies still to review and come up on the podcast. We have had a couple before that as well. All of that plus what the guys are going to be talking about here today. I hope you enjoy it. Just thought I'd give you a little intro preamble. Ian, Mike, it's all yours. Take it away.
Welcome back in my day, listeners, for another nerdy review. This time, well, we're going to dial up the Destiny because your boy Ian Walter has seen Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And I couldn't wait to talk about it, so you're getting another special bonus presentation here on the podcast. Just want to talk a little bit non-spoilers for the new indie movie directed by James Mangold, starring your boy Harrison Ford.
Alongside the wonderful Phoebe Waller-Bridge and that amazing original John Williams score.
Gotta say, I was real excited to get out of the theaters. Couldn't wait. Had to see it opening day, you know. Could not wait to see another Harrison Ford reprisal of this classic role. And, you know, coming off of the last outing, which is the, I don't know, often overlooked Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. Yeah, that one has nothing on this one. So don't worry about that. If you have reservations because you like the classic Indiana Jones trilogy and you don't want to, you know, be embarrassed again at another theater outing by a Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls type of movie, you have nothing to worry about because put your faith in James Mangold, first of all. He is a great director, and I got all the classic indie feels out of this movie. I gotta say, coming up to the theater, watching a movie like this in 2023, after 2022's astonishing nostalgia kick with Top Gun Maverick, I'm not saying I'm surprised that we're able to get these kind of classic movies in the modern day, but I had to say, like, it was a treat to watch Harrison Ford do his thing, and not only that, get a solid, well-written action-adventure epic with everybody involved kind of firing on all cylinders. I'm not gonna lie, I had a lot of fun with this one, exceeded my expectations, and I'll just talk a little bit about what I thought about the story non-spoilers. I thought that, you know, we get a lot of familiarity out of Indiana Jones. If you're a fan of the classic trilogy, you know, we're gonna get some great action sequences. We got some great chase sequences and quite a lot of them in this film. Globetrotting adventure across land, air, sea, and time will tell if this is going to be one of those classic Indiana Jones films that we'll be talking about for years to come. But you got a lot of chase sequences in the film that has become a bit of a staple of the Indiana Jones movies, but they found a way to make each one seem unique and not like a retread and just another chase sequence along the film. Each one had its own spin to it, which I thought was nice. But as you can tell from the trailer, you get some flashback sequences throughout the film. In this case, elaborating on Indy's backstory, which I think helps in the overall narrative of the film, kind of setting up the plot and what we're doing in the present of the film. But that's about enough for non-spoilers. I think I just recommend that you go see this in theaters. It's one of those movies you want to experience for yourself and draw on your own conclusions. But I'm going to dive into a little bit of spoilers for those Back in My Day listeners who wanted to see it opening weekend and now want to hear what at least Ian Walter had to say about it. I got to say, from the jump, we get a really great action sequence that takes place in Indy's past. It's likely taking place after the original trilogy, if I had to guess. But it's nonetheless setting up a villain from Indy's past, that will come into play in the present and drive the plot forward. But it's got this really great cyclical nature of setting up that conflict and then revisiting it towards the end to really make this an action adventure epic. And it teased that word time because, of course, if I was teasing a little bit at Kingdom of the Crystal Skull being a indie film that attempted at dabbling in space or conquering the angle of space, this is an indie film that goes that extra mile to really try and conquer time, if that makes sense. So it was teased that in the trailers that they were going to play a little bit. The idea of this Dial of Destiny will play with time. I was a little bit reserved when I realized that that's the direction they were heading. Where are we going to end up with this? Are we going to have a sequence like we got at the end of Crystal Skull where it's just out of left field and not fitting? But in this case, they stayed true to the story. This is a film about family, albeit found family at times. It's an action-adventure film with a heart. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge, I can't stress this enough, knocked it out of the park. We've got characters coming in here that are part of the team. We've got old recurring classic characters like Sala from the original trilogy. We have a new kid by the name of Teddy. We have strong villain played by Mads Mikkelsen, and his name's drawing me a blank, but he was in Logan. He played the villain in Logan. Very mustache-twirling villains. I mean, we are dealing with Nazis here. I mean, you wouldn't really want to dive deep into that segue, I hope. But either way, I think Indy in this film, it's clear to me, still has an eye for killing Nazis, and they sure know how to make a good time out of something like that. So basically, the long and short of it is, once they actually get into this idea of time travel, you think that it's going to be very straightforward, like the plot is very generic with the mustache twirling villain who wants to just, what do you expect? He's a Nazi. He wants to go back in time. He wants to go back to the heyday of World War II and change the outcome of the war. Actually, it's really funny because Mads Mikkelsen's character, Dr. Valla, he says he wants to go back and eliminate Hitler. He's a Nazi who actually wants to take out Hitler because he sees the mistakes that he was making. He thinks he can do it better. And what does that make me think of, guys, ladies and gentlemen? Another back in my day classic, Command and Conquer Red Alert. Because of course you want to go back in time and eliminate Hitler. But that's enough about Nazis. I think this was a great film with some great action, some great emotion, some great heart, and ultimately, it's a movie that I want to see over and over. I definitely want to go back and watch this and see how they really pulled it together. Like, I just thought that everything made sense. They thought of every little twist and turn and how it all connects together. It just didn't feel like anyone was phoning it in. It felt like everyone was along for the ride and they were having the time of their lives. I urge you to go see Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. There were so many great moments in this film that really felt like a classic Indiana Jones entry. We got a surprise cameo from Antonio Banderas himself. Yes, the Mask of Zorro. If you know anything about back in my day, you know we just did our 1998 throwback summer movie wager where we spoke about the Mask of Zorro, and I believe somebody mentioned how it was very Indiana Jones-esque, and I won't reveal who that somebody is, but that somebody may have won the 1998 summer movie wager. So go check that episode out. Let us know what you thought about the summer movie wager, how you're feeling about the summer blockbusters that are coming out so far. Did you see Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and what did you think about it? But all in all, I think you have to go see this one for yourself. I'd say the runtime of this film is earned. I'd say it's a 2.5-hour film that really, by the time you get to the final act, by the time they start really dealing with this angle of time travel, you're not really sure what you're in for. But the final act is just as bombastic as the rest of the film. I think all the action set pieces in this film are thrilling. It seems there's nonstop action throughout. But really, it comes down to the surprising way that these characters were written and developed. And I think there's still room for indie stories out there. This might be Harrison Ford's last outing as the character, but I think they did a great job with the CGI, whether it be deep fake. I know that there's probably some de-aging involved, but deep fake seemed to be the method of choice. But it doesn't take you out of the film. It was done beautifully. I think the film also earns its $300 million budget, which I think is an extreme budget. But if it's Disney or Lucasfilm, they're going to spend their money on that. I think it's worthwhile because you can really see every dollar spent here. And I think none really goes to waste. I think they really made a special family-friendly film here. Non-stop action romp. Either way, Boyne and Walter loved it.
Welcome, everybody, to Back in My Day podcast, a special Nerdy Murphy. Nerdy Murphy.
Let's start that one from the top.
That's okay. Let's keep going. Nerdy movie review. That's a tongue twister. Dave probably never read it out loud when he created it. But Nerdy Movie Review, another one of those. I'm joined by...
We've done them in the past, Power, but we've never done them under the official title.
Movie Review. It tripped me up for some reason. But anyways, so yes, Nerdy Movie Review. We are reviewing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. My name is Michael R. Power, and I'm joined by...
Ian Walter.
And yeah, so Ian, we have, you know, on this show, we have reviewed a lot of the Marvel movies because we loved them growing up, and this is our... used to review them. We have reviewed things like the Super Mario movie, and today we are reviewing another Marvel movie, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So both of us ventured out into the theaters, saw the latest Marvel movie, and, you know, I really want to hear what you think about it. I have thoughts. It was the first movie I've been to in a long time. It was really fun to go back to the theater, but before I get into my thoughts, I want to hear, as the Marvel zombie on the podcast, I want to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah, I had real high hopes going to this one, especially having placed it at number one on my summer movie wager.
Yeah,
but this is a commonplace for, I think, most of the people that are participating in the summer movie wager, thinking this one is kicking off the summer and it's going to run all summer long, going to make all the money. I think it's doing pretty well, for the most part, so we'll see where that lands up. But as far as expectations go, I think this managed to blow me out of the water. I did think we were going to get a solid outing from James Gunn. I think he's capable of wrapping up the trilogy that he started. And, had some detours along the way, of course, because it's part of a greater cinematic universe that the MCU is. So it had to do, you know, the Guardians participated in things like Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame. So James Gunn had to navigate that a bit. It's not just his baby now. It's part of the overall MCU. So, you know, there's that. It had that going for it. But for the large part, I thought it knew what it wanted to be. It stayed to a singular story and gave all of the Guardians, I think, something to do. For the most part, all the major characters in the movie had satisfying story arcs. So I really did enjoy this one. I thought that I haven't officially ranked it, but it is going to rank fairly high overall, probably in the upper half of all of the MCU films. So certainly, I don't know. I think I liked it better than the second one, but maybe I'm not sure if I liked it better than the original. Well, let's put it that way. Right. But it definitely landed the plane. It did what it needed to do, I think, in my mind. So it was really good.
Yeah. I 100% agree. I may even be more hyperbolic and more positive than you. For me, this movie was a big exclamation point of Marvel is back and it's not going anywhere, sort of thing, right? I've been sort Perfect. Of down on the last some of the last few Marvel movies. I didn't like Eternals, I didn't like Ant-Man, Quantumania. You know, but sprinkled in there was No Way Home, which was amazing and is in my top 10. So Marvel has been a bit up and down in the last few releases for me. And I was kind of worried about them, but this movie just reminded me what I love about Marvel movies. Seeing it in the theater was such an experience. I saw it in 3D because that was the time that I went to, and the use of 3D was really, really good. So I thought it was excellent. I thought, yeah, it's you know, James Gunn on top of his game. He knows this cast so well. He knows his characters so well. He's such a good director and writer. He's quintessential Marvel to me. He's got the funny quips and the comedy, but also the heart, and as well as this the serious story
He picked the right characters for that.
Yeah, scene, right? The serious message and story behind the movie, and also amazing action. And that's what like the best Marvel movies have. They have like this amazing action, these amazing effects, and this amazing story, and with a little bit of humor sprinkled in. And that's what this movie does so well. So I thought it was amazing, man. I thought it was excellent. It makes Guardians like one of the best trilogies, if not the best trilogy of all the Marvel movies, of all comic book movies in general. And it's just such a fitting end for all of these characters, which some of them I know they are never bringing back. And so without getting to spoilers, because we haven't really gotten spoilers yet, we can get spoilers after, but those I think are sort of our non-spoiler takes. So I think we're both really high on the movie, and I actually did rank the movie, and it ranks number 14 for me.
Okay,
which is pretty high of all 14 in my comic book movie overall, like every comic movie ever made, it's 14. And it's number 10 in my MCU ranking.
Oh,
yeah, so it cracks my top 10 MCU. It comes one spot ahead of Guardians 2 and three spots after the first Guardians. So I think it's a great trilogy. All three movies are amazing. This one is probably a bit darker and more adult than the other two. So it sort of ages with the characters, or ages as the people who were young that watched Guardians 1 are now a bit older now. This movie would be a bit, you know, for an older audience. So I think it's perfect in that way. And I don't know, I just can't praise the movie enough. I just think it's a 5-star amazing experience at the movie theater. So
that's awesome that it hit your top 10. As I said, I don't know right off the bat, but I think Guardians is sitting at my number 10, so it'll be the determination. If I find on a rewatch that I do like it more than the original, then it will make top 10. If not, it's not gonna be. It'll be
do like, you watch them twice before you rank them, eh? I usually
a little bit, because like I'm usually very high on the movie when I come out. Like most of the MCU movies, like even, you know, this past Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, like I'm very positive on, so I do need to kind of sit with it. And I find that I watch it a couple times in close proximity for the most part, so I give myself a bit of a buffer there.
I always rank them like right like within a few days of watching them, and if I feel like if I do that with each movie, then it's fair, right? So it's like I'm off a high in each movie, but I'm ranking them within a few days. So yeah, it's always one of the things I do. So yeah, anyways, is there anything specifically in the movie that you want to get into about it? Anything that stands out? Anything you want to dive deep into? Let's get into spoiler territory now.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting way to kick it off. I thought that although I did enjoy the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, I came to appreciate what he was doing with it by the time we got to Volume 3. Because like I said, it's not just three movies. You've got these characters going on a journey with the rest of the MCU and, you know, fighting with the Avengers and defeating Thanos and everything. So there's a bit of a longer path for some of these stories for these characters. And I think the holiday special kind of gave you a chance to sit with them a little bit on, like, not on a grand scale, just kind of like picking up. It kind of brought them from where they were in the Infinity Saga to like where we're going to find them in Volume 3. I really started to appreciate what he was doing inside of that, because I think you would still enjoy this movie without having watched the holiday special, but like just having that additional time with these characters and kind of knowing like when it opens up and they're running nowhere, they're literally, they've made nowhere their home. It's like a moving headquarters for the Guardians, and they're basically responsible for an entire people that live on nowhere. I mean, that's all really cool stuff, but I think it would have been like that much more like, oh, this is where we're at, like where we kind of expected that, because we know that that's where they're at because of the holiday special. Yeah, and like it introduced Cosmo and this and that. So it's not all a bunch of new things flying at you at once. That having been said, we do open up on nowhere and we do get an action set piece with the new character, which is, Adam Warlock. And Will Poulter, I think is the guy's name.
Yep, Will Poulter.
he does a good job, I think, of doing whatever he was set, like whatever they had in store for this character, like what James Gunn wanted to do or whatever the studio has designs for with this character. Like, I think he did a good job delivering, but he was probably the one piece where I look back at the movie and go, well, he's just starting out, so we'll see where he ends up. But I wasn't so satisfied with what we got with him. Whereas everyone else, I felt like they got really good attention to detail and had like sort of complete stories and everything like that. He was just kind of there.
I think he was like, he was almost like, I don't know, for the marketing, it was like they needed a new character and, you know, they had this like new actor to kind of trot out. But I think really the movie is still about the main cast, the main, is it what, four, five? Like if you count Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Karen Gillan as Nebula, and Groot, and Mantis. So like six Guardians.
Well, they had are five, the core five of the in movie. The first movie, and then they added Nebula and Mantis. So we're right at seven.
So the seven.
And then we added Cosmo and Kraven.
Yeah, but I think that it's really about the people that we started with Guardians 1, like the five or the seven people. He's kind of like the new character that kind of like, you know, was used sort of in the marketing of the movie and kind of like get this like kind of hot new actor. But yeah, really, he was there. He was kind of a background character at the end of the day. It was really about wrapping up the story for the seven characters.
Like,
so
he was a powerhouse and he was involved in some fun action sequences.
Yeah, too, but I think it creates articles. We're bringing Adam Warlock, we're bringing Bill Poulter. But I think if you go into the movie thinking this is going to be an Adam Warlock movie or he's going to have a big part, like, yeah, you'd be a bit disappointed. But
yeah, like,
I went into this movie wanting to wrap up the story of the Guardians, right? So I really had no problem with him kind of just being there for the reasons he was there. And he really wasn't in a lot of the movie. He did serve a purpose to get the plot moving at the beginning, which was like he comes in and he steps to the Guardians and he injures
Rocket. That's exactly
that
what
sets
he is.
Off he's the yeah that's the chain whole of events.
Yeah
but
like it is cool how he's involved. Like, we, you know, we did kind of set him up in volume two. He's with the Sovereign and mm-hmm. like that's his mother or whatever, the leader. Mm-hmm. And he was in that pod. So there was a tease in the first film with the pod in the collector's vault or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then we had their official pod that created him in
which
the second
was like
one. And it was
a credit scene of the second movie, right?
And the funniest thing is, like, whenever I looked online, like, I'd always see criticism on, like, oh, we just dropped it, we never picked it up. This is volume three. They introduced it at a teaser at the end of volume two. Like, can you just relax? Like, they haven't had another movie to explore that plot thread. So, but I think, like, I'm not a huge Adam Warlock fan from the comics, so I don't really feel anyways about which way they took him. I do see that out of all the characters in this film, he has like maybe the most one note kind of
but it's fine, right? Because like you have seven characters already that you need to wrap up their stories, so interesting new character, and he's gonna get the shortest shrift. But I think that's perfectly
fine. I think he did accomplish like what his purpose was to get them thrust into the action, and then like mm-hmm. he pops in and out, and when he does, it's kind of comical. Like, he has some great moments. Some
I liked him. I don't think Adam Warlock, in the way that he's portrayed in this movie, is enough to be like a main one of the main characters, right? He needs to go through some development before he gets there. So he was fine. I think the real, you know, star of the movie is Rocket.
Yes,
which is incredible that it's a CG character. That is
kudos to Bradley Cooper and to Sean Gunn, who was doing a lot of the mocap in the early days. So
And I know a character, you know, let's talk about the high evolutionary, like the villain.
Well, I was gonna say that's like Rocket is the focus of this story, and I think it's very important because you got a lot to do with like Peter and Gamora in the first film, and you know, Peter dealing with his dad in the second film. So like we've focused on other Guardians, but in this movie it does hinge on like Rocket's origins, and I don't think that would have worked as well as it did if we didn't have an immaculate performance. I think a really well done over the top performance from the guy who played the high evolutionary, which let me just pull his name because I want to be fair to him. But yeah, he did such a great job. Chuck Woody Iwuji as the high evolutionary. I thought like he was great. He was very menacing in a way that, like, I think I've touched on this in my little nerdy review that I did when my first reaction to the film. But basically, like when you have someone like Thanos or Loki that have layers and they're very in depth, and you either redeem, like in the sense of Loki, or you have just like you understand what Thanos is about and why his mission is the way it is. It's like you don't really need that with the High Evolutionary. He's just a bad dude. This is a dictator. This is a guy who just wants to rule the universe his way, create his own perfect species in his idea of what perfect should be. Not necessarily perfect in the sense that like everyone would agree on, just something that he thinks is like the perfect species. He wants to be the ruler of a very specific thing and then doesn't really care about anybody else. And that's dangerous. I thought he presented as someone who is very dangerous. And there was an interesting thing that happened in the film where we're getting sprinkles of Rocket's origin throughout, where it's kind of flashbacking at key moments to like bring us along on his journey, intercut between the present day. And I didn't notice it at first, but you start to notice the difference between the High Evolutionary's performance when he's like in his prime and like bringing Rocket up and then discovering that Rocket has this great potential. And then now, after knowing what happens to him and knowing Rocket is like sort of responsible. And then he's that much more eccentric and he's got that like peeled back face and it's kind of creepy. And I thought he did a great job.
Oh, he did a great job. He's to me a great villain. You know, this villain that kind of like, kind of like eugenics, kind of like wants to make the perfect race, and he's obsessed with it. He's like the mad scientist, you know, slash eugenics, slash wanting to rule his own world kind of person wrapped in one. And the actor did, Chukwuji did an amazing job. And it is, to me, like a really good superhero movie is not top tier unless it has a really good villain. So he definitely pulls his weight. The High Evolutionary is a great villain, very just like evil to the core, right? But it's not like one of those villains like I'm trying to think which ones, but like kind of Thanos, kind of like an Aquaman, where you have the villain where you can kind of see where they're coming from. You know, this guy is just evil, but he still makes a great villain.
Because like in a vacuum, what he's trying to accomplish is incredible, but if you like, as we know with science, you know, and this movie does look at
the mad
like,
scientist gone
treatment of animals, like the way he puts them in cages, like that's part of it. Like, we know that science involves a lot of like animal testing. Well, that's never a good thing, but like this showcases that like it really doesn't care about anybody but his own like his own mission, his own.
He'll kind of like he kind of goes like the classic villain. He's kind of like going too far, right? He's doing it
because
but he's going,
you know, if it was far. Someone even a little bit more level-headed as a scientist, like at some point he would have realized that Rocket is what I was trying to achieve, but he just doesn't see him for what he is. And so that made it very emotional. I thought like Bradley Cooper crushes it as Rocket always, but just like to have, like you said, he's a CGI character and we actually care. Like we look back at his origin and he's like this cute little raccoon. And like, you know, for the most part, we don't even like raccoons like living in the city, right? So but here we are caring about this one. Yeah, it's just so like, true.
They got us to care about a raccoon. That's the biggest trick that Guardians pulled off. Yeah, so he's basically the main character of the movie. But, you know, every of one of the characters, I think, gets a satisfying arc. You know, like Peter... Star-Lord, who's obviously the main character of the first two movies, he's still there. He's still, you know, the second main character. He's still getting this interesting arc of, you know, we saw him fall in love, him and Gamora fall in love, and then he lost Gamora, and now she's back, but she's a different Gamora that doesn't have any memories of him, and he's going through that, which is a very interesting thing to take your character through, right? Like, he's got the love of his life, but she doesn't remember who he is. And
she wants to be a Ravager, not a Guardian.
Yeah, I thought the journey that he goes on in the movie is very... It's got something to say, and it's a very satisfying, and I think it's a good... him and Gamora's arc in the movie is very satisfying, and also can wrap up the characters in a way that is also satisfying if we never see them again, right? If we see them again,
it was somewhat atypical, right? And like, he reconciled with that pretty well, and they kind of like
In a typical movie, they would get together again, but in this movie, it's like they don't, and it's like that's
fine,
and that is a very bold kind of take. In a way to take. So,
and you touched on how this was like kind of the end of the Guardians, but it's not like it's the end of the Guardians as we know it. And the Guardians will live on in one form or another. But we have this interesting tag at the end that says Star-Lord, the legendary Star-Lord will return. And now he's on Earth. So that's interesting too.
Yeah. So going into the movie, I knew that, you know, Zoe Saldana didn't want to put on the Gamora makeup anymore. I knew that Batista was done. And I was just waiting for them to kill those characters off. And they make sort of head fakes towards doing that. What they do actually in the movie, which I think it's almost like meta. It's like James Gunn knows that we know that these people don't want to come back and probably aren't coming back, and this is their last movie. And he kind of fakes killing them off. But in the end, none of them actually get killed off, but they still end up with satisfying arcs and in ways that if we never see them again, it'll be okay. They have a satisfied ending to their story. And so I thought all that was very beautiful, and all that made the movie like that much better to me. And in a way, it subverts your expectations. And so anyways,
I agree. I think if you think about it, like in the first one, you know, we lose Groot, and sure, we get a Groot back in the form of baby Groot, but it is a different Groot. It's like Groot's son essentially, or something like similar. So we did lose a Guardian, and then in the second one, we had that really emotional death of Yondu.
Yes.
I think you're right. I think we were expecting some deaths here, and I think he subverted our expectations pretty well in that regard. I will say that they keep sending Star-Lord into space. That was the third time. This one is like without even more dramatic with the puffy face and everything. But then they gave that good arc, even for a character who said was probably the least written in that way, was Adam Warlock, and they gave him a bit of a redemptive arc too. So he joins the Guardians. We've got a new status quo of Rocket being the official leader, and we have a post-credit scene of him leading the charge of the new team, which essentially we lose all the original members except for Rocket. We've got Baby Groot, Rocket now and grown, Groot. Yeah. And he's like Alpha Groot kind of thing. And he's massive, which is awesome. Yeah. And then I don't even know that little creature's name, but then we got Adam Warlock and,
it's one of the kids they rescued. She's Fraglin. Actually a character. Fraglin. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And the kid. Oh, and that was funny too. I loved like Drax in volume 2, I found didn't have much of an arc, because in volume 1, he basically had, you know, he just wanted to get revenge against Ronan, and then they defeated Ronan, so he had a bit of a complete arc in that sense. He was more of comic relief when you introduce him and Mantis and their dynamic, which I thought was firing on all cylinders in Volume 3, by the way. But they also gave these characters something else to do and set them on the next path for their characters. And like we mentioned, they didn't kill them off necessarily, but they're probably retiring from the MCU, but at least we know their characters are out there doing something, right? So we've got Nebula wanted Drax to stay behind on Nowhere and help her run the place, because he's kind of formed this bond with the new children they've adopted. He's like these enhanced children of the High Evolutionary. You've got Mantis going off to kind of do her own thing. She's kind of now on like what Peter Quill's journey was, right? Where she's kind of like on a self-discovery mode, and she went off with those two big beasts or three big beasts or whatever they were. Mm-hmm. The beast that they fought at the beginning of Volume 2. But I thought
Drax is that what they were?
Yeah, the beast. They're like these like interdimensional beings or something. I don't know. They're pretty cool. But yeah. So I thought what Drax was doing with That whole thing with the children was hilarious to me. Like he, like it just kind of dawned on me, and I actually watched volume two leading up to my second watch of this one. So volume two, it, the thread is there. It's just, you didn't know what the destination was, but you know, he's kind of like averse to Baby Groot in the beginning. And then he's kind of like a father figure to him by the end. He's more like loving and that kind of thing with him. So they turn him into, instead of the destroyer, he's the daddy of the group. And I thought that was a pretty cool move for Drax.
Yeah.
And I think it
he
works.
Lost his daughter and stuff. So those beings are called Abelisks.
Morons. I was laughing.
Yeah. Abelisks.
The Abelisk. Yeah.
The Mantis lives over.
And on Nebula, I thought she, throughout this entire trilogy and even the MCU as a whole, has had a really great character arc. So I really like where she ends up. She starts off as this really like one note villain, daughter of Thanos. You can understand how she got the way she is because she's been tortured by him, and you see that in like Infinity War and Endgame. But you know, the place where she is now is just more palatable. It's like, it's something that you could really see. I want to see more from Nebula in MCU. If we can get more of her, that'd be great, because she's really become like the leader of nowhere in a sense. So yeah, it's good stuff for all these characters. But I did want to say there was some fun surprises along the way, and we had that, I don't know if it was the first act or the second act, I guess maybe the end of the first act, where they were doing the heist, and we got reintroduced to Sylvester Stallone's character in the Ravagers. Oh, yeah. And that's where we end up getting Gamora back. But we had Nathan Fillion's character as like the head security for that.
Yeah, oh my god.
That was,
I love
cool
that facility, sequence. That whole series, like that whole sequence in that facility of the
Orgo Corp,
and it's like made of human flesh and orifices, and the comedic beats, and even like the action that those scenes had, like it's just, it was all well done, definitely. And so,
and then of course we're heading towards the final action set piece. Takes place on and around Counter Earth. So what are your thoughts on this? I know I kind of teased a mention of it being involved in volume three as we kind of got hyped for this film and why not. We knew that Counter Earth was going to be involved. So what do you think of how they executed that?
Yeah. It was good. It was awesome. It was well done. It reminded me of, I think you're going to get into it, the Spider-Man Unlimited TV show from the 90s. And you know,
exactly,
it's like
right,
kind of
yeah,
like the world that Rocket would have grown up in. But it was almost,
but
it
doesn't
was
it
very...
make perfect sense? It's like the perfect,
yeah,
like Easter egg kind of thing. It's
yeah,
like
it,
it makes perfect sense for a character like Rocket to be from there.
But it's like it had this like creepy, like goosebumps kind of like vibe to it, to the world, right? But it was, yeah. And then the fact that the high evolutionary, you know, is done with it and blows up an entire world, ranks it up there as evil,
and that
villains,
just hammers
he destroys
home this
entire world.
Well, that's the thing, and hammers home the idea of it doesn't matter how great his aspirations are, he's obviously at the end of the day a scumbag. And that's why I thought he did such a great job portraying that, kind of, because even by the end of it, like his own people turn on him, like they cannot hold on to the same level of crazy that he's operating under. So it's just like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I thought that the whole thing made perfect sense. I thought all the action was great. I thought that hallway sequence, we love hallway sequences in this fandom. But like, I thought like that whole action piece in the hallway there, where it just felt very well choreographed, and all the Guardians were kind of like doing like what we know them to do.
Yeah,
just...
the action was great. That's what I said makes Marvel movies, right? A story with heart, comedy, and great action. So the movie had it all.
Like you touched on him just wiping them out. I thought like we didn't really get a moment to kind of grieve the loss of Counter. It was just kind of gone in an instant, and we were on to the final battle. Yeah. But the whole idea of they are the Guardians now. So I think like in the beginning they were cool with just killing whoever, but now they've become this kind of well-oiled machine of a team that kind of wants to look out for everyone, look out for the underdog. And you know, Rocket couldn't just leave there with knowing that all those animals were held captive, and then the other kids, and they end up rescuing everybody, saving the day and defeating
them. And that's the emotional arc of the movie that I'm talking about when I'm saying it's an emotional arc. It has something to say, but it also has humor and action. And that really, the ending of it, of them saving all the animals, that's the through line of the movie, right? That's the beating heart of the movie, is that sort of every life matters. And animal lives matter just as much as human lives. That's what's kind of saying. Again, and then it has the high evolutionary as the villain to kind of push you towards that, or show, you know, show the anti version of that and why it's bad. So, well, it was so well done, man.
It was very well done, and you know, that whole thing with Rocket, how he had that initial group of misfits, you know, with the otter and Teef. And Floor.
Yeah.
was all like
great names.
It was incredible that we were introduced to those characters and we cared about them by the end of it. It was just it was very well done overall. I think like we're both very high on this movie, but I just think like they could have done like a satisfying finish, and somehow we knew that that was going to happen, but it just somehow was able to exceed even those expectations. So hats off to James Gunn in that respect. And I thought it was funny. Like, I know that these characters have been around. Like, he handpicked who he wanted to be in the Guardians and whatnot. So Rocket Raccoon existed prior to James Gunn's involvement. But I know, like, the soundtrack and everything was a big thing. Like, the song choices and everything was a big thing for his Guardians films. I'm curious if I ever had a discussion with him. Like, clearly he chose Rocket to be an important character. Does it have anything to do with the song Rocky the Raccoon? Because that's another song that kind of fits the mold for all the songs that were chosen for these movies. But Rocky the Raccoon being a song about a raccoon who goes and gets his gun and wants to get revenge. And it's just like, it seems like very poignant. So it'd be interesting to see if that was like an inspiration for being, for making Rocket such a pivotal character. But either way, I thought the music was very well handled. We did a nerdy review. I think Dave did a nerdy review on Super Mario Brothers, and we talked about it on this on Back in My Day as well. In that movie, they use
Don't Sleep Till Brooklyn. Yeah.
And there were a lot of songs in this movie that are songs that are used in movies. But I still think, even though we had them back to back like that, that it worked so well in this one. Like, it worked, like, it fit as part of the movie as opposed to just a song that they chose.
James Gunn is the master of the needle drop in my mind.
Yeah. So they had that one and another one that worked really well. But, like, either way, it was a very good soundtrack. I think all three of the films have had very good soundtracks. I actually own the CDs for the first two, so it'll be interesting to see if I can track down a CD for Volume 3. Yes, I own CDs.
Oh my god!
Yeah, but they're good soundtracks, man. I was very happy with this film overall. Yeah,
but the fact that they made them in CDs means we're old. That's funny. All right, so but there you go. I think it comes with a very, very high recommend from Ian Walter and myself.
And borderline top 10 MCU. We'll see where
top 10 for me.
Rank it, where and Dave ranks it.
Hey, so we both had a number one in the summer movie wager, so I think we're both feeling pretty good right now about that movie coming number one.
I was hoping Wife Power joined us for this review just so I could play her the world's smallest violin. I think as much as I want Indiana Jones to be amazing and I want it to make all the money in the world, it doesn't seem like early numbers or early reactions are leaning towards it being number one overall. So we will see.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So, yeah, good news for us is movie's actually, you know, we're not the only ones that liked it. It's killing it at the box office. And yeah, let's hope it stays that way, because it's nice to see the MCU back on top. And the only thing I'm sad about is that James Gunn is left the MCU, and this is his
that's the other thing I was going to say when you were saying like, oh yeah, well, the MCU's back, baby. I did mention in my little reactionary nerdy review that I don't think this is a good barometer in an overall sense. I really do have high hopes for the Marvels, and I think like we need to see them consistently smashing in order to kind of, because I've never had like I've never wavered on whether or not I think the MCU should continue. But I mean, it is something, a point of contention based on the last couple outings, like you said, that it's kind of mixed reviews and whatever. So seems overall positive for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I just think that with James Gunn leaving, it's not like he's like going to keep the MCU alive. So they're going to have to take note of what was doing well, and hopefully we still get
But they could learn a good lesson, which is find a great director and let him have free reign and let him tell a story he wants, and trust them, and they can give you great movies, even in the sort of confines of your universe, right? Because he was dealing with constraints. Like, he's said that he wanted to, what they did with Gamora in Infinity War is not what he wanted to do with the character, but he just still fit it into his movie, right? They were originally gonna totally kill off the character. So it's just like, give the creators the freedom to tell the stories they want, and even in your universe, with the constraints presented.
Yeah, I think it's the right person, fine line, right? Like, it's this interesting balance you got to strike, because, like, I think James Gunn's great. I think what he was able to do, accomplish, was great. I also think it works for him that the Guardians are kind of over here on their own. Yeah, they mixed it up with the Avengers.
Yeah, they still all went
big event films or whatever. But like that, he did have the opportunity to kind of tell this final story aside from whatever is going on in the MCU, right? Like, this was like, whereas I don't think you should give someone free rein and have them not acknowledge anything that's going on in MCU. Like, going forward, I think, like, there needs to be someone that's able to strike that balance where they can tell their own story, do what they want to do, but also be cognizant of how it fits in with everything else. It's a tall order. It's a tough task. It is.
All right.
But
so
we will see.
Yeah, we'll see how those movies shake out. I'm sure we'll be here to review them all and give our thoughts on it. And the next one is the Marvels. But I think between now and then, we should try to get together for Secret Invasion. That'll be a lot of fun. And so stay tuned.
Yeah, if we're not doing it, maybe we'll do like the first couple or whatever on the main feed. And then we're definitely going to have to keep up with the Patreon exclusives.
Yeah, so let's make that our commitment now. If you subscribe to us at patreon.com/backofmyday, we will cover Secret Invasion over there.
I have high hopes for that series.
I do have high hopes too. So
turn him Nick Fury, man.
Oh, that's awesome. So you can find the podcast there, their Patreon, patreon.com/backofmyday, or on your podcast app of choice. Back of My Days, this podcast is called. Rate, review, subscribe if you can. It all helps. And we can find us on social media at Day Back In on basically all the social media apps, Instagram, Twitter. Thanks for listening to this nerdy movie review. Finally got it right. And we'll catch you next time.